Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Community Recalls Vibrant Soul Lost in Shooting. Hundreds of people said goodbye Thursday to a vibrant 11-year-old boy known as Smiley, a week after he was shot to death at his Iowa school by an older student who also wounded 7 other children and staff members before killing himself. Residents of the small community of Perry packed a Catholic church and spilled over to a nearby church where the funeral for Amir Jolliffe was televised. They recalled a boy with a bigger spirit than his 11-year-old body could contain, as the Reverend Andrea Brownlee put it. He had a vibrant soul, his catching smile, and his endless energy are what most people have shared with me when sharing their thoughts about Amir, said Brownlee, of First Christian Church. He was always on the move. He refused to stay in one place, seeking adventure and excitement in every aspect of his life. A 17-year-old student, armed with a shotgun and handgun, killed Amir before classes began January 4th, the first day back from winter break. The high school principal, 2 other staff members, and 4 students were wounded, and the shooter, Dylan Butler, later died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The school, in the city of 8,000 people northwest of Des Moines, has been canceled since the shooting, but the elementary students will go back to class January 18th, and middle school students will return January 19th. District officials have said the high school won't reopen until the repairs are completed. The shooting started in the cafeteria the middle school shares with the high school, so the repairs must be done there before the middle school can reopen. Speaking near a blonde wooden coffin topped with a wreath of flowers, Brownlee described Amir as a person who glued his family together. Amir, a 6th grader known by his family as Smiley, was someone who stood up for his friends and wouldn't back down from bullies, Brownlee said. Amir was not just a bright light or a drink of joy. He was a firm defender of justice, Brownlee said. He stood up against bullies, supporting those who needed a voice and ensuring that kindness always prevailed. In an earlier interview, his mother, Erica Jolliffe, described her son as an outgoing boy who seemed to know everyone in Perry. He was so well-loved, and he loved everyone, she said. In a statement several days after the shooting, Butler's parents said they never had a hint before about the horrible violence their son was planning, and said they were cooperating with investigators to understand this senseless crime. We are simply devastated, and our grief for the deceased, his family, the wounded, and their families is immeasurable, Jack and Aaron Butler said in a statement. The next story is Reynolds Proposes Regent Funding Far Below Requests by Vanessa Miller. Instead of the nearly $40 million in appropriations increase Iowa Boards of Regents wanted the legislature to approve for the next budget year, Governor Kim Reynolds has recommended a $12.3 million bump, amounting to a 2.5% increase for each of Iowa's public universities. In making that recommendation as part of her fiscal 2025 budget proposal released this week, Reynolds rejected several specific Regent University requests, on top of the general education appropriations asks, including a University of Iowa request for $10 million for a new rural healthcare partnership to address workforce challenges and the needs of an aging population, and $500,000 more for a much-needed technology upgrades at the State Hygienic Lab. Iowa State University's request for an additional $10 million for a STEM workforce initiative aimed at supporting economic development, the state's manufacturing industry, and degree programs producing workers for in-demand jobs. And 2 additional University of Northern Iowa requests, one for $500,000 to sustain its community college partnerships, and a second for $2.5 million to continue its Educators for Iowa initiative aimed at recruiting more students to the teaching profession. Reynolds' proposal also excluded any funding toward a $1 million request for expanded mental health services on campus that student leaders implored Regents to add to their legislative requests for funding. Students on our campus are in significant need of increased accessibility and options for mental health and well-being, according to a letter that UNI, ISU, and UNI student government sent to the Regents in September. Increased funding is necessary to better expand counseling services to students, to lower wait times to meet with mental health professionals, and broaden options for support to better students' academic and personal needs. When asked about the governor's recommendations, Regents spokesman Josh Lehman said the board thanks Governor Reynolds for her support for Iowa's Regent universities as demonstrated by her FY 2025 budget recommendation. The board appreciates and the continuing state appropriations our institutions receive, Lehman said. Iowa's public universities are key drivers of the state's economy and must have the proper level of resources to continue to provide the outstanding education our students deserve. By taking Reynolds' suggestions to increase state support for the university's general education budgets by 2.5%, ignoring the other campus's special requests, the legislature would increase its total Regents' appropriations from $569.7 million this year to $582 million next year. The legislature also could do something entirely different, as it did last year when it denied the universities any general education increase and instead tied its entire $7.1 million Regents bump to specific programs across the campuses. In Reynolds' $12.3 million appropriations increase proposal for fiscal 2025, which starts in July, she suggested giving each campus a 2.5% general education bump, meaning the University of Iowa would get the most at $5.5 million, followed by $4.4 million for ISU and $2.5 million for UNI. The Regents had sought $14.8 million more in general education support, with both the UI and ISU getting $4.5 million increases and UNI getting a $5.8 million hike. The UNI increase would have allowed it to keep tuition flat next year. Differentiating tuition and mandatory fees will help the university ensure costs align with the needs of our students and the state while remaining a reasonable investment for taxpayers, according to its appropriations request. In order to be competitive in recruiting students, UNI must continue its efforts to realign the sticker price and net cost of tuition and mandatory fees relative to the state's public research universities. ISU and the UI argued for their respective increases by referencing inflation, demand for competitive salaries, and the need for online programs bringing courses to place-bound students across the state. In making a case for an extra $10 million next year toward a rural health care initiative, UI officials suggested the state actually commit $50 million over 5 years to build a dynamic and sustainable partnership that will provide increased access and improved health outcomes for Iowans. A $10 million a year first and second year funds would go toward building a healthcare workforce pipeline. Years 3 and 4 would focus on developing and deploying telehealth opportunities to rural communities. And years 4 and 5 would continue efforts to recruit and retain workers. UNI's request for $2.5 million more for its Educators for Iowa program targeted a similar concern around training workers for critical jobs. There is a growing teacher shortage in the state and across the nation, according to UNI's request, citing the state's $1.5 million allocation for the same program last year. UNI was able to initiate a number of scholarships to recruit and retain teachers and meet Iowa's critical educator shortage. For FY 2025, UNI requests an additional $2.5 million to continue efforts to recruit more students into the teaching profession. The campus also wanted state support for the first time for a community college partnership it launched last year with $4.2 million in one-time federal American Rescue Plan program funding. State funding would allow us to continue providing scholarships to the UNI at IACC students in the spring 2025 semester after the federal funding is no longer available. When asked about the governor's recommended denial for any money toward those special requests, board spokesman Lehman said, "The board and our universities will continue to work with the governor and General Assembly during the legislative session." The next story is shots fired, other violent crimes down in 2023 in Cedar Rapids by Emily Anderson. The city of Cedar Rapids saw a noticeable decrease in shots fired incidents and other violent crime in 2023, according to the Cedar Rapids Police Department's annual crime statistics. Police attribute the decrease in some arrests made early in the year and the city's group violence intervention program. "We made some timely arrests and contacts in the spring and in the summer and were able to get some people arrested and charged, and that took some people off the street that were more readily going to use a firearm to solve a problem," Interim Police Chief Tom Jonker said. "That set the tone, and we continued to stay vigilant through the summer and into the fall." Shots fired incidents have been consistently decreasing in Cedar Rapids since they spiked in 2020, jumping to 163 reports from 99 in 2019. In 2023, 81 shots fired incidents were reported in the city. The first year, the total has dropped below pre-pandemic levels. It's also about 35% less than the five-year average of 124. Jonker said an emphasis on gun crime will continue as one of the department's main focuses in 2024. "We're just going to keep up the pressure there to make sure that we're limiting the illegal use of firearms, and hopefully that will reflect itself in the shots fired incidents," he said. Violent crime, murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault dropped to 435 reports in the city in 2023, down from 465 in 2022, but still above the 2018 and 2019 totals, which were 281 and 283, respectively. Police investigated 8 murders and cases of non-negligent manslaughter in 2023. "All those cases have been fully investigated with no outstanding suspects or evidence," police said. The total compares to 10 reports in 2022. The five-year average is 8. The city of Cedar Rapids has been working to reduce violent crime through its group violence intervention program since 2019. The program involves police and other community members working with people in the community who may be at high risk of being a victim or a perpetrator of violent crime. Jonker said there's no convenient metric for measuring whether the program has been successful, since many factors cause violence, but the annual statistics are encouraging. "It's doing what it's supposed to be doing," Jonker said. "They're reaching out to people, they're reaching out quickly to people, and they're getting some engagement from the community, which absolutely is what we need to help keep those crimes down." Within the violent crime category, only 2 types of crimes increased in 2023, and both were likely because of changes in reporting, according to police. Assaults on persons in certain occupations increased from 6 reports in 2022 to 12 in 2023, after Iowa law in 2023 added healthcare workers to the occupations included in that category, along with police officers, firefighters, and other first responders. Domestic abuse cases increased from 124 reports in 2022 to 142 in 2023. That number jumped in 2021 after 8 Iowa changed the way police record domestic abuse, and it hasn't gone back down. "Domestic abuse is hard. You're not in the house, you're not in the apartment, you're not at the location. That's a crime that is hard to prevent," Jonker said. "We can work on the backside of it, trying to get the victim away from the suspect, but that's not one that's easily tied to something that we are doing. The victim has to report it. Other crimes that saw increases in 2023 included shoplifting and drug-related reports, especially controlled substance violations. Police reported 1,236 cases of shoplifting in 2023, which is 30% higher than the five-year average of 953. The total compares to 1,055 reports in 2022 and 777 reports in 2021. Jonker said the police department has been working with businesses in the city to help deter and prevent shoplifting, and most shoplifting cases are solved very quickly. Video is our best friend. We get every day an email saying, "Does anybody know who this is?" And between officers and jail deputy staff, they're usually resolved quite quickly, Jonker said. Drug-related crimes increased from 1,153 reports in 2022 to 1,406 in 2023. Jonker said he believes the increase is a result of increased diligence by police officers during traffic stops and other investigations. "You don't get a drug-related crime reported just because," he said. "It's because an officer is making a stop, going beyond the stop, and finding drugs." The last story from the front page is titled, "Second Winter Storm This Week Upgraded to Blizzard," by Brittany J. Miller. The second winter storm of the week, and 2024 at large, was upgraded again before its arrival Thursday night in eastern Iowa, when it should bring heavy snowfall, icing, blowing snow, and blizzard conditions through Saturday morning. The National Weather Service Quad Cities Bureau on Wednesday afternoon first issued a winter storm watch, which means there's potential for a significant winter weather event. The Bureau upgraded it early Thursday to a winter storm warning, which means a significant winter storm is imminent and is a danger to life and property. By Thursday afternoon, the Bureau added another layer of warning. Many counties in eastern Iowa, including Linn and Johnson counties, were upgraded to a blizzard warning from 5 p.m. today to noon Saturday. Surrounding areas remained at either winter storm warnings or advisories. Snow should start falling in eastern Iowa between 8 p.m. Thursday and 4 a.m. today, depending on the area. Cedar Rapids and Iowa City may start seeing snowfall by 11 p.m. Thursday. Eastern Iowa may see anywhere from 4 to 12 inches of additional snow. The highest totals are projected for north of Interstate 80, where some areas may see up to 14 inches. Areas south of the interstate may see freezing rain and rain. The corridor is forecast to receive between 8 and 12 inches of snow. Dubuque may see more than a foot. By tonight, strong winds will pick up and blow snow around, creating blizzard conditions in some areas. Cedar Rapids and Iowa City could see 45-mile-per-hour gusts. As of Thursday afternoon, meteorologists still were uncertain how extensive blizzard conditions would be from today to Saturday. The winds also will overlap with frigid temperatures that fall into the teens from tonight into Saturday. A flash freeze is possible at that time. The NWS Quad Cities Bureau also issued a wind chill watch for eastern Iowa counties from Saturday evening through Tuesday morning. Wind chills will fall as low as minus 40 by Saturday night into Monday morning. Temperatures will be below zero for most of eastern Iowa on Sunday, as well as Monday, when many Iowans will head out to participate in the Iowa caucuses. Snow should cease anywhere between 10 p.m. today to 6 a.m. Saturday, depending on the area. However, travel impacts from blowing and drifting snow may continue into Saturday morning, the Weather Service warned. The city of Cedar Rapids extended its snow emergency to 6 a.m. Sunday. Cars should not be parked on emergency snow routes until then. Residents should continue to follow the odd-even parking rule in residential neighborhoods from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Park on the odd address side of the street on odd calendar days. Park on the even address side of the street on even calendar days. The first winter storm of the week, which hit Monday through Wednesday, dumped about a foot of snow on Cedar Rapids. Much of east central and northeast Iowa saw 11 to 15 inches of snowfall. Hundreds of motorists called the Iowa State Patrol for assistance as road conditions deteriorated and at least 238 crashes were reported. Overnight Wednesday, 1 to 3 inches of snow fell on east central to northeast Iowa. Cedar Rapids received around 3 inches and Iowa City saw just over an inch. Brittany J. Miller wrote the story and is the energy and environmental reporter for the Gazette. Turning to page 2, we have this story titled, Marion Nurse Loses License in National Diploma Mill Scandal by Clark Kaufman. Another Iowa licensed nurse has been caught up in a national scandal involving the alleged sale of 7,600 fake diplomas from Florida nursing schools. At least 20 criminal defendants have pleaded guilty or been convicted at trial for their participation in an illegal nurse licensing scheme. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, 7,600 fake nursing diplomas were issued by various South Florida-based nursing schools that operated under different names. Roughly 2,800 individuals who obtained diplomas from the schools passed their National Nursing Board exams. Many were encouraged to apply for licenses in states like Iowa that do not limit the number of times an individual can take and fail the exam, according to state officials. Mamie Soa Pei of Marion is one of the 4,989 individuals alleged to have received a degree from the Florida schools without completing the required program hours or clinical training. She is seeking judicial review of the Iowa Board of Nursing's November decision, finding her guilty of fraud in procuring a license by falsifying her application, credentials, or other records submitted to the board. Court records indicate the 2022 criminal investigation of the owners and administrators at several Florida nursing schools led to the accusations against Pei, who attended one of the schools, MedLife Institute, for 10 months when it was fully accredited by the state of Florida. In 2019, the Iowa Board of Nursing awarded Pei a license to practice in Iowa. In 2021, the FBI launched Operation Nightingale, an investigation into nursing education programs that were suspected of selling fake diplomas and transcripts to individuals who then used the credentials to take a nursing exam and apply for licensure. Investigators found that students were encouraged to apply for licensure in Iowa and other states that are perceived to exercise a lower threshold of scrutiny on applicants. Iowa is among the states that does not limit the number of times an individual can take the National Council licensure examination. When interviewed by Iowa investigators, the board alleges Pei couldn't name any of her instructors or classmates at MedLife, although she passed the national exam on her first attempt before being granted a license to practice in Iowa. According to board records, after Pei was licensed, she went to work as a licensed practical nurse at the Silver Oaks Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, formerly known as the Willow Gardens Care Center in Marion. The board alleges that over the next 4 years, she was consistently given poor performance reviews due to medication administration errors, poor patient assessments, poor documentation, failure to adhere to the facility's policies and procedures, and unprofessional behavior. In deciding to revoke Pei's license, the board alleged that during a hearing on the matter, Pei had provided the board with multiple nonsensical answers regarding her understanding of the MedLife program or what she allegedly did there as a student. In arguing for a reversal of the board's decision, Pei's attorneys claimed that not only did Pei not provide her transcripts to the board, since it's board policy to only accept such documents from the schools themselves, she did not know information the transcripts contained. Pei alleges she was preyed upon by the Florida institution and applied for her Iowa nursing license in good faith with the belief her credentials were legitimate. The board has yet to respond to the petition seeking judicial review of its actions. Pei is not the first Iowa nurse implicated in Operation Nightingale. In 2022, the Iowa Board of Nursing alleged Enome Masango of West Des Moines worked as a state-licensed nurse for 4 years after purchasing a fraudulent nursing degree from the National School of Nursing and Allied Health in Virginia. Masango said he paid a man named Musa Bangura for the transcripts and diplomas as a shortcut to completing his education. Bangura has pleaded guilty to wire fraud and agreed to forfeit $268,900. He has yet to be sentenced. Board records indicate Masango had to take the LPN exam twice and the RN exam 4 times before passing the tests. While licensed in Iowa, Masango worked at Valley View Village, an assisted living center and nursing home in Des Moines. In 2023, the Iowa Board of Nursing alleged Helena Danwe of Cedar Rapids obtained a fraudulent nursing degree through a Florida diploma mill and then worked for Care Initiatives, one of Iowa's largest nursing home companies, for 4 years. The board revoked Danwe's license. Operation Nightingale resulted in criminal charges against Bangura, Patrick Nakwa, and Jonah Napoleon, among many others. Napoleon admitted she had personally obtained at least $3.2 million from the sale of fake nursing school documents. And last July, she was sentenced to 21 months in prison on a charge of wire fraud. She has yet to begin that sentence due to an agreement to testify against alleged co-conspirators. Nawakwa was initially charged with conspiracy to commit health care fraud and making false statements related to health care matters. In July 2022, he agreed to plead guilty to wire fraud. The case remains active, although all court filings in the matter since December 2022 have been sealed from public view. In December 2022, Bangura pleaded guilty to a charge of wire fraud and agreed to forfeit $556,000. That amount was later scaled back to $268,900. Bangura has yet to be sentenced in the case. Now turning to the Insight page, we have this guest column by Bruce Lear. It's titled, My Magic 8-Ball Predictions. When my kids were younger, we had a magic 8-ball. If you asked a yes or no question and shook it up, up popped an answer like, without a doubt, or outlook not so good, or concentrate and ask again. The Iowa legislative session has begun. With that in mind, I thought I'd introduce my 8-ball version. Should public education be a partisan issue? Answer, decidedly no. But it is. Public education has become a wedge issue used to score cheap political points. It worked once in a Virginia election, so let's keep doing it. I predict they'll take another partisan run at banning books they don't like but haven't read. Will there be a comprehensive study revamping area education agencies? Answer, no and yes, definitely. No, it won't be a comprehensive, and yes, there will be a study. Unless educators, parents, and community leaders insist it is a comprehensive and based on facts, it will be neither honest nor comprehensive. Governor Kim Reynolds promised a comprehensive review of AEA's aiming at aligning them with the Department of Education. She has a desire to choke the government, but there may be another reason. Part of her vision is to turn AEAs into Department of Education police, regionally enforcing her vision of what public schools should be. Remember last year, Reynolds and her minions tried to persuade parents public schools were teeming with teachers and librarians, grooming students and pushing pornography? So wouldn't they want to morph AEA personnel into public school enforcers? AEAs now have some regulatory responsibilities around special education. With a few added paragraphs, those regulatory functions could expand to police local schools. It's almost impossible to catalog all the services now provided by AEAs. Legislators will need to talk to educators and parents before they wielded any cutting axe. Will Reynolds keep her promise to increase teacher salaries? Answer, outlook not so good. Iowa has more than $2.4 billion in budget reserves, but I predict we'll hear, That's one-time money. We can't spend it on ongoing expenses. If salaries are increased, it will be for first-year teachers as a kind of bait-and-switch plan. Once they're here, they'll stay. They won't. There's a lust to cut state income tax to zero. That means Iowa loses almost half its budget revenue. Can we make these predictions? Can we make sure these predictions don't come true? Answer, decidedly yes. Special education parents are a powerful group. It's time to use that power to save AEAs and increase teacher pay across the board. The first step is to email your legislators, especially if your legislator is part of the majority party. You can find addresses at legis.iowa.gov. And that column was by Bruce Lear of Sioux City, who taught in public schools for 11 years and represented educators as an Iowa State Education Association regional director for 27 years before retiring. And you can reach him at brucelear2419@gmail.com. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, January 12, 2024. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. Sheila Riggs Keeling, Cedar Rapids. Sheila Riggs Keeling, age 76, of Cedar Rapids, formerly of Rancho Cucamonga, California, passed away at the Donna and Dennis Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy on January 9, 2024. Per Sheila's wishes, there will be no visitation or services at this time. A private service may be held at a later date. Sheila will be interred in Oak Park Cemetery in Claremont, California. Cedar Memorial Iowa Cremation will be overseeing these arrangements. In lieu of flowers and plants, please consider a donation to the Red Cross, ASPCA, Doctors Without Borders, and the Donna and Dennis Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Sheila's memory. Alice Evelyn Hamlet, Edgewood. Alice Evelyn Hamlet, 96, of Edgewood, Iowa, passed away on Wednesday, January 10, 2024, at the Edgewood Convalescent Home in Edgewood. Online condolences may be sent to leonardmullerfh.com. Funeral service, 10:30 a.m., Monday, January 15, 2024, at Trinity United Methodist Church in Edgewood, Iowa, with Pastor Mike Jackson officiating. Visitation, 3 to 5 p.m., Sunday, January 14, 2024, at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Edgewood, Iowa. Friends may also call 1 hour before service at the Trinity United Methodist Church on Monday. Interment at Edgewood Cemetery, Edgewood, Iowa. Hugh D. Fries, Marion. Change of service. Services scheduled for Saturday the 13th, 2024 have been canceled due to the weather. Anita Rose Hargens, Cedar Rapids. Anita Rose Hargens, 70, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Friday, January 5th, 2024, at Oldorf Hospice House, surrounded by her family. She fought a long and courageous battle with lung cancer. Updated service times. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 16th, 2024, at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories, with visitation from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, January 15th, 2024. At the Cedar Memorial Chapel Stateroom. Interment will be held in Cedar Memorial Park and Cemetery, Garden of Tranquility. A luncheon will be served at the Family Center for friends and family directly following the services. Gertrude Trudy Louise Carpenter, Cedar Rapids. Change of service. Memorial service 2 p.m. on January 13th at Oakland Church of the Nazarene by Pastor Michael Perkins. Friends may visit with the family on Saturday, January 13th after 1 p.m. at the church. Please visit tnfuneralhome.com to view Trudy's full obituary. Francis Pruny Thomas, Anamosa. Francis Pruny Thomas, 90, of Anamosa, died Wednesday, January 10th, 2024, with his family by his side. In lieu of flowers or gifts, memorials may be directed to the Arbor Day Foundation, the Anamosa Fire Department, the Olin House Hose Company, or the Anamosa Ambulance. The family would like to thank the doctors, nurses, and staff of Compasses Hospital, Hospice, and the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics for the wonderful care Francis received. Harvey William Weiss, Vinton. Harvey William Weiss, age 87. Due to weather concerns, Harvey's funeral services will be rescheduled. Visitation will be held at Trinity Lutheran Church in Vinton from 9 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 20th, 2024. Funeral services will follow at 11 a.m., also at the church. Interment will be at Evergreen Cemetery in Vinton. Online condolences, phillipsfuneralhomes.com. Norma Lee Rao. Norma Lee Rao, 93, of Coggin, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, January 6, 2024, at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Due to the projected winter storm, the services have been rescheduled to next week. The visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Thursday, January 18, 2024, at United Parish Church in Coggin, Iowa, with a funeral service to follow at 11 a.m. Burial will follow at Coggin Cemetery in Coggin. Please share a memory of Norma at murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. Marie Theresia Recker, Manchester. Marie Theresia Recker, 91, of Manchester, Iowa, passed away on Thursday, January 11, 2024, at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester. Visitation will be held 5 to 7 p.m. with the rosary service at 4:30 p.m. Sunday, January 14, 2024, at Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Manchester. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, January 15, 2024, at St. Mary Catholic Church, with an additional visitation at the church from 10 to 10:45 a.m. with the Reverend Gabriel Anderson officiating. Burial will take place at St. Mary Catholic Cemetery, Manchester. Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Manchester is in charge of arrangements. Christian J. Fleck, Independence. Christian J. Fleck, 54, of Independence, Iowa, and formerly of Marion, Iowa, died January 3, 2024, at Mercy One Olwine Medical Center in Olwine, Iowa, following a long battle with myotonic dystrophy. Memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Monday, January 15, 2024, at Hope Wesleyan Church in Independence. Burial will be at a later date at Mount Hope Cemetery, Independence. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. until service time Monday, January 15th, at the church. Robert F. Bob Stuber, Cedar Rapids. Robert F. Bob Stuber was born May 31, 1924, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the son of Fred H. and Anna M. Crawling Stuber. A visitation will be held from 1 p.m. until time of funeral service at 2 p.m. Sunday, January 14th, at Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. Entombment will follow at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Bob was known as a perfectionist and in all things liked to say, "I did it my way." In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family. Online condolences may be directed to the family at cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. In other notices, Kalmar. James Schneeberger, 94, died Wednesday, January 10, 2024. Helms Funeral Home, Decorah. Marion. David John Graham, 69, of Marion, died Thursday, January 11, 2024. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service. Olwine. Donald D. Mara, 62, died Tuesday, January 9, 2024. Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home. And other deaths? Joseph Emerson Rand, 85, of Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, died Sunday, January 7, 2024. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service. And Sandra Carol Reddy, 64, of Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, died Wednesday, November 1, 2023. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service. We'll start the sports page with what's on television. Live first run same day. In the NBA, Rockets at the Pistons, 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. Warriors at the Bulls at 7 p.m. on NBCS Chicago. Hornets at Spurs, 9 p.m. on ESPN. In men's basketball, Minnesota at Indiana, 5:30 p.m., FS1. Dayton at Duquesne, 6 p.m. ESPN2. Rice at South Florida, 6 p.m. ESPNU. DePaul at Villanova, 7:30 p.m. FS1. Wright State at Youngstown State, 8 p.m. ESPN2. Nebraska at Iowa, 8:30 p.m. BTN. Boise State at Nevada, 9:30 p.m. FS1. In pro soccer, Bayern Munich versus TSG, 1899 Hoffenheim, 1:25 p.m. on ESPN2. Men's wrestling, Iowa at Nebraska, 6:30 p.m. on BTN. In pro golf, the Sony Open, 6 p.m. Golf Channel. Dubai Invitational, 2 a.m. Golf Channel. Pro lacrosse, Toronto Rock at Las Vegas Desert Dogs, 9 p.m. ESPNU. And figure skating, European Championship, men's free, noon on E Channel. On the radio, men's basketball, Nebraska at Iowa, 8:30 p.m., WMT 600 or KXI C800. Local talk shows, Todd Brommelkamp Show, 6:30 a.m., KGYM. Gym Class, 3 p.m., KGYM. Spencer on Sports, 4 p.m., KGYM. And listings were submitted by the radio stations. And online, boys basketball, Mount Vernon at Marion, 7:15 p.m., crmlivesports.com. And you can contact us by calling 319-398-8258 or 1-800-397-8258. Now turning to the girls' basketball notebook, Maquoketa positioned for first title in 20 years. Cardinals travel to Monticello for showdown tonight, weather permitting, by Jeff Linder. Chad Specht stood on his deck last spring, coffee cup in hand. Just blocks away at Maquoketa High School, the girls' basketball coaching job had become open. Specht's wife interrupted his thoughts. "You're going to try this, right?" "Right. There's a good group of girls here. I live within 1,000 feet of the school. It's an easy fit for my family," Speck said. "Plus, conditions are favorable for massive success. Led by seniors but driven by a stacked sophomore class, the Class 4A 11th-ranked Cardinals are in pursuit of their first league championship in 20 years. Maquoketa captured the WAMAC Conference East Division title in 2004, the Big Ben crowd in 1995. In terms of five-player girls basketball, that's it. In their second year in the River Valley Conference, the Cardinals are scheduled to play at 3A No. 8 Monticello tonight, weather permitting. "I'm hoping we can get it in," Specht said. "Monticello has a good squad, a great player in Jaden Cooper, and some really good guards around her." Specht spent 3 successful seasons at DeWitt Central, compiling a 50-12 record in a stint that ended in 2020. After that, he served as a boys' assistant at Maquoketa, then North Scott. Then, as Specht said, this popped up. The Cardinals won't wow you with their shooting percentages, 37.5 from the field, 29.3 from the arc, but they'll zing you defensively, averaging 15.8 steals per contest. "I want defense to be a tradition for us," Specht said. "I know kids love to score points, but we have nights that 3 or 4 of them can put it in the cup and nights that nobody can. We try to apply pressure at all positions, and we try to be flexible in our defenses, though we're primarily a man-to-man team." Led by Cora Wydell, Aubrey Kreumann, and Kendall Kuhlman, the sophomore class comprises 78% of Maquoketa's scoring. Wydell and Kreumann are listed at 6 foot and 6'1", respectively. "Cora, not many people work as hard as she does," Speck said. "Aubrey is very talented, a gifted athlete." Despite all the attention that the 10th grade class draws, Specht was quick to point out the phenomenal leadership of the seniors. Reese Kuhlman will run track at Winona State next year. Casey Williams will do likewise at Mount Mercy. Carly Cavanaugh will pitch at Kirkwood. When Specht took the job, one of his requests was the enhancement of the Cardinals' non-conference schedule. DeWitt Central and Western Dubuque already were there. A rivalry Saturday date with Mount Vernon was added, along with Davenport Assumption and Iowa City Liberty. Solon senior Kelly Levin is one of four Iowans and 700 players nationwide to earn nomination for McDonald All-American status. A guard bound for the University of Iowa, Levin is averaging 20 points, 7.3 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and 5.7 steals per game for the 3A top-ranked Spartans. She has scored 1,611 points in her career. Also nominated from Iowa are Ali Tonkey and Alaya Riley, both of Johnston, and Brooklyn Love of Waterloo West. Now we'll have the boys' basketball notebook. Lansing Key has been approaching rarefied air by Jeff Johnson. It's a school that always has been way more about getting three outs than shooting three-pointers, about coaxing three passes than free free throws. But this Lansing Key boys basketball team is changing the sport's narrative this winter in an extreme Northeast Iowa community known for baseball. The Hawks go into their Upper Iowa Conference game against Elkader Central with a 12-0 record and a number 8 state ranking in Class 1A. As far as anyone can tell, Key never has been ranked in hoops. It has never qualified for the boys' state basketball tournament, let alone for a sub-state final, it is believed. The old Lansing High School did make it to state in 1946. Key High School consists of students from Lansing and New Albany and its surrounding areas. "Yeah, we're used to it in baseball," said third-year Key head coach Jeff Cotta. "It was my birthday on Saturday, and we went out for a little while around town, running into people. It's definitely all they wanted to talk about. People around here like basketball. It's just more of a baseball town." Cota expected his Hawks to improve upon last season's 7-15 record, considering all five starters returned. But even he has been caught a bit off guard about being perfect this far in. A win tonight would tie the school record for longest winning streak of 13. His son Jordan is a 6'5" junior who leads Key in scoring and rebounding, and inside-outside threat who has a 54.3 field goal percentage and who has its most three-pointers. Junior Dalton Mutterman is the point guard, scoring at a 17.3 clip and averaging 5 assists per game. They are the Hawks' primary scorers. Senior guard Caleb Drape also has started every game, with senior guard Andrew Colesrud, junior forward Carson Strong, and 6'6" junior center Braden Darling also getting starts. Trey Cotta, another of Coach Cotta's sons, has played in every game as a freshman guard. "I knew we had a good group coming back," Jeff Cotta said, "but looking at the whole season, I guess I wouldn't have probably thought we'd be sitting 12-0 right now. When you look at the schedule, I thought we'd have a chance to win every game, but you figure one or two would probably go the other way. But so far, they've bounced our way." Cotta has been with this junior class as a coach since they were in fourth grade. He coached Keys junior varsity until being promoted to head varsity coach. The school has never won an Upper Iowa Conference championship, its last conference title coming in the Upper Mississippi Conference in 1983. Around the hoop, Postville has a 10-3 record going into Friday, surpassing its win total combined from the previous three seasons. The Pirates were 7-54 combined in 2021, 21-22, and 22-23. Iowa City Regina lost its first two games this season under new head coach Paul Rehnquist, both to Class 3A schools. But the 2A Regals were on a 9-game heater going into their River Valley Conference game Thursday night against Mid Prairie for a 9-2 record. Turning to the sideline column in women's basketball, Clark added to Wooden midseason watch list, Dateline, Los Angeles. Iowa senior guard Caitlin Clark was named to the John R. Wooden Award midseason top 25 watch list on Wednesday. Clark won the award last season and was a finalist her sophomore year. Chosen by a poll of National College basketball experts based on their performances during the 2023-24 season thus far, the list is comprised of 25 student athletes who are front runners for the sport's most prestigious honor. In her senior campaign, she has broken the Big Ten and Iowa all-time records for scoring and assists. She leads the country in points, 501, points per game, 31.3, and assists, 121. She notched her second straight triple-double on Wednesday night in a win at Purdue. In women's wrestling, Iowa's Welker earns weekly national honor. Dateline, Iowa City. Iowa women's wrestler Kylie Welker has been named USA Wrestling's Athlete of the Week. Welker, who is the top-ranked wrestler at the 170 weight class, picked up 3 wins this past weekend to help the Hawkeyes capture the 2024 NWCA National Duels title. The Franksville, Wisconsin native had a forfeit win Saturday against Adrian College. On Sunday, she defeated second-ranked Tiffany Boblitz via technical fall in the semifinals. In the finals against North Central College, Welker picked up an 11-3 win via decision to give the Hawkeyes the late lead. In boys swimming, Linmar to host one of IHSAA's district meets. Linmar was one of 6 schools selected by the Iowa High School Athletic Association to host boys district swim meets on February 3rd. The Lions are ranked 6th in the state power rankings. They will host an 8-team field that includes Cedar Rapids rivals Jefferson, Kennedy, and Washington. Vinton Shelsburg also is in the field. Iowa City High, Iowa City West, and Williamsburg have been assigned to the Johnston District. Top-ranked Waukee also is in the Johnston field. Decorah will compete at Mason City. All meets will start at noon. Tickets for the district meets will go on sale at 9 a.m. January 31st through the tickets page on the IHSAA website. All sites will utilize digital tickets through IHSAA partner Hometown Ticketing. The fastest 32 individual swimmers and 24 relay teams from district competition will qualify for state competition. The state meet is scheduled for February 9th and 10th at the University of Iowa's Campus Recreation and Wellness Center in Iowa City. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. they will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.